Jerry.
Hello, Luke.
Welcome back to Wild Eye.
Thank you. The office is looking great.
It is looking good, isn't it? How's our studio?
It's huge compared to what we had.
It's quite big and it sounds good.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I think there's some good... I hope the guys get in here.
Yeah. Well, they do. Unfortunately, for those that are listening, we haven't had much of a chance to film much for YouTube just yet.
Yes.
Because there's been a lot of teething issues. Obviously, we've just moved our entire company to a new office. As you can see, there's furniture all around us that I still need to put together.
Yeah.
But we're getting there, you know.
Lots of tech. It's awesome.
Yeah. But it's nice to have you back in the Wild Eye office.
It's good. Yeah. I spoke to Jono, because him and Andrew are, as we're recording this, they're in Kenya.
Mm.
And I spoke to him when I was here Friday last week. And I said, I might come and pop in here and actually, instead of working in coffee shops, actually come in here. He says, no, there's coffee. I've got a desk, so I can come. So yeah, I'll hopefully pop in quite regularly. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to having you go often, you know, just without the... We won't be like, Jerry, we need help with this. We need help with that.
Yeah, that's Luke's problem.
But no, it's always lekker to have you around. And so how long has it been since you officially, I don't want to say resigned.
Yeah.
Is that the right word?
So the official conversation that I had with John and Andrew was on the 12th of January.
Okay.
And the letter of notice was for 3 months, just from a director point of view.
Yeah.
So we then all agreed that the end of March. So the end of March was my last day, but it was weird because that last week was office move.
Packing up.
And everyone's looking home. Like, okay, what do I do now? Am I? So yeah, it's been about 3 weeks now, officially.
Yeah. And how have you found us?
It's interesting. I have these moments of guilt where I'll be in the morning, I'll train and I'll have a shower. I'll go up to the office because I'm now having to spend time at home. I'm building a bit of a more of an office also that can record and just something nicer.
Something lekker.
And I'll be there and I'll go, I've got to quickly go and fetch my visa or something. And it's like, oh, but what time must I be back?
Yeah.
Or halfway through the day, I'm like, I'm going to quickly drive and go get a coffee.
Yeah.
But can I do this? Yeah. So there's this.
Let me check my team schedule.
Yeah. Is it okay? So it's been interesting. And like I said to you guys last Friday, I think it's been such a long time and it's been such an emotional ride from just John and Andrew and myself to what this beast is now.
Yeah, yeah.
That I think it's going to be a long time still of feeling a part of, but you don't have to be there. It's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird. Yeah. I think I wouldn't call it a mistake, but my challenge has been that since I gave notice, there's three big things I've had to deal with. It's the transition out, which is working with John and Andrew, all the legal side of it, getting all the handovers and stuff done. Then there was building the new business, which has been going for 6 years, but now it's official. And then there's the Greenland prep and training. Suddenly it's just like, okay, why don't we just do everything at once?
And we're going to chat about Greenland and death in a little bit.
So it's been a ride, hey? Yeah. But yeah, I think resign sounds quite hard. And when
let's
John...
let's say step back.
Yes. Yeah. So we mentioned, we never said leave or exit or anything. Because I'm still running Svalbard this year, next year. You and I touched base on potential trips for even 2028.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just a new transition.
And you still have those private clients that aren't going to let you not run a safari for them.
100%. I just spoke to Tanya now about one we're planning for Laurie.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of others coming through. So yeah, it's still in the fold just from the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your new business, well, I don't want to say new business because you've been doing it for a long time. You've even assisted my wife with many.
That's right.
With Jess and helping her get through things and so forth. But now that it's not a... What was it? Quote unquote side hustle.
Correct.
Now it's the real hustle. How's it been going? Been enjoying it?
It's been good. It's
nice
to
just focus, eh?
It is. Yeah. I think being intentional about that's interesting. And we might have spoken about the one challenge was the rebrand. Because I was always Jerry from Wild Eye. And it was never intentional. We never sat down and said, okay, cool. At the end of each video, say this. Yeah. It just happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And it became a thing. It's like, oh shit, how do I get away from this?
Yeah, yeah.
So the rebrand had to be that I'm not only a photographic guide and educator who does some coaching. I'm now a performance coach who also does the photographic guide.
Sort of just flipped over. Yeah.
And that was interesting. So
one's taken the 80%.
Yeah, one to
20%. And
100%. And the same way with the expeditions, as a public speaker, I was not only an expedition leader, participant, explorer, whatever you want to call that, who does that. It's flipped over. And designing the website and putting the website together is interesting because you had to change the entire narrative without alienating the old side of things. But it's been good.
And that's kind of like what we had to do with Wild Eye, right? When we decided that we were going to branch out from being a purely photographic company, now we have to rebrand the website. So I understand where you're coming from that point.
You're involved with that heavily. Yeah. And the difficult thing is to get through the noise online for people to pay attention, for them to realize, oh, but I've lost No jokes. I think since beginning of the year, about 3,500 followers.
On Instagram, eh?
Yes. Yeah. Because people are like, what is this now? Because they don't see the whole narrative. They see like snapshots.
Yeah. Look, it's for the last two or so years, it's been interesting watching you try and juggle that on your social media platforms and trying to post morning coffee with G and then back into wildlife and then back into inspirational quotes and then listen to that. And so I'm glad that you now have a little bit more freedom to
It's hard. I think the change that I've had personally for the social platforms, I spoke to a client as well yesterday. So the service offerings is twofold. There's obviously performance coaching, which is the process that you can perform better at any part of life.
Yeah.
Mental health, physical health, relationships, work, parenthood, friendship. We can perform better. So how do we unlock that? But there's also still the creative side. Yeah. It's not photographic education. It's not that. I'm not teaching apertures and shutter speed.
Yeah.
The guys here can do that. That's amazing. It's what happens next. How do you take your creativity and build a brand or launch a website or something like that?
Yeah.
And I spoke to a client yesterday, and it's interesting, the road as well. For me now, I'd rather posting for clients to get clients rather than followers. But now you're going against 16 years worth of this is how we do it.
Yeah.
And I just checked the numbers dropping. But if you say to me, do you want 10,000 extra followers or 10 new clients? No brainer.
Yeah.
So it's a very big shift for me.
Well, I think, you know, even from a wild eye point of view, we've ascertained very quickly over the changing dynamics within the social media world and so forth, how followers really aren't important. It's not at all what we're chasing, you know, and that's the whole idea. You're chasing people that want to go on safari with a brilliant safari company, not people that are looking for cheetahs killing wildebeest every 2 seconds, not viral content all the time. So yeah, I get you. 10 new customers or clients is far better than 10,000 more followers.
Yeah.
And you'll whittle them out, you know. You got to get down to the people that want to be with you, that want to hear from you. Yeah. And you really don't need those 3,000-4,000 people that don't.
It's always very impressive looking at the
vanity.
Number. 100%.
It's vanity, yeah.
Is, if you look at the number, I mean, I think I'm on 90, whatever, 1,000 followers. Mm. You can't get that now anymore.
No.
Unless you buy, because we were on the beginning. And at the time when Instagram was popping, we were posting amazing shit from the Mara and of polar bears and this. And people were just following like they would National Geographic or just a picture site.
Yeah.
So to get that scale now, so it's nice to have the audience. But how many of them actually pay attention?
Yeah, and how many of them are actually looking to go on a safari other than just, or get life coaching other than just seeing a madman pulling tires down the driveway? Yeah, you're doing, but we'll chat about that.
I had a thing, you mentioned that, it was quite awkward. There, close to us, there's a new Plato at the Alcoa Center.
Okay.
And it's right around the corner. So a lot of the mornings, if I've got some random admin to do, I'll go there, have a coffee.
Okay.
It's 2 minutes down the road.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, and I've got a cap on, and I'm working with my cappuccino and like a, I don't know, almond croissant, which is quite delightful. And working, and this guy walks in, two guys walks in, and the guy says to me, is it you? I'm like, I don't know what we
depend.
Yo, what do you want? He's like, you the guy that drags the tires. I'm like, Oh, okay, cool. I follow you on Instagram and good luck. It was like, whoa, weird. Yeah.
You're a celebrity.
It's like, well, in my local community. So that's been interesting.
Not just on the plains of the Mara anymore.
Yeah, because normally when someone comes up and is like, oh, I know you from Instagram, it's, oh, okay, cool, you do photography, you've seen the pictures and stuff. So the attention is still there. It's just harnessing at the right time when the people are paying attention.
Yeah.
It's an interesting space.
It is very interesting.
Sure. Well,
good luck with it, man. Shout out if you ever need help with that sort of thing. But
absolutely.
I trust you know the process better than most of us. So,
It's a fun thing. I mean, I am also, you mentioned YouTube. Mm. That's one of the avenues I'm going to explore a lot more again is YouTube. Because I think that the message and the content that I want to carry across, whether it's creative coaching, talking about photography, the vision, the creative voice, all those things, or about performance coaching, even public speaking and stuff, the short format just doesn't carry the same weight for what I want to do.
Yeah,
And you're giving people like snippets, so, and it's a bit more work, but to film for YouTube, I've got the YouTube channel up and running now again slowly, and then to split it up into little bite-sized pieces.
And what's that YouTube channel's name, just for everyone?
It's just Jerry van der Walt.
Jerry van der Walt.
Yeah, my name.
You got your whole name.
100%.
Lucky bastard, yeah.
I think so, yes. Yeah. I think so. Good question.
You should have called it Coffee with Jerry.
Ooh.
Yeah. Anyway, no, let's not double.
Stop it. So the YouTube thing for me is nice because I've always been comfortable with the camera.
Yeah.
But I do feel that the content I'm trying to produce, whether it's creative coaching, speaking about travel or the expeditions or then the coaching side, it's just... there's more value to add.
Absolutely.
So it might be a slow burn. But
The nice thing about the long format videos is you add a lot more value. The short format is obviously vanity clicks, follows, likes, views. You know, it's great, and you can often add value in that as well. But the long format, I think, is definitely where you're going to shine. And then you use that to get your snippets onto Instagram and get them onto your YouTube.
Yeah.
I know here at Wild, it's definitely something I'm looking to increase. We're doing really well on our on our YouTube at one point, and it's time to now try and get that back on track and so forth. So over the next year or so now with the new studio. Like definitely looking.
Yeah, it looks great in here.
Yeah, you must come record sometimes.
I'd love to.
Yeah, you know, we got Canon quality as well. No more Sony.
Oh, you changed it? Oh,
yeah, we did. Yeah, we changed over to Canon.
That's awesome. Because the Sony was always a little bit soft sometimes. It would miss the focus.
Yeah, it wouldn't focus correctly. Yeah. It was just a bit of a hack most of the time. Anyway, plus Sony, meh.
Nah, whatever.
Yeah. Oops. Anyway, so let's chat about the elephant in the room, which you're leaving for in?
Sunday night.
Sunday night.
Yeah.
So for those folks that are listening that don't know, Jerry's going to cross Greenland.
Yeah.
On foot. Not in a big, I don't think it's possible in a 4x, whatever. You know, I don't
know. Question. No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So are you, how's the butterflies feeling?
Oh, it's all over the place.
Yeah. So maybe give us a quick breakdown. What is this trip that you're doing? You know, just the quick bullet points and then we can dig into it from there.
So the short version is it's 540 kilometers more or less. 25 days from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Sure.
So it's unsupported, which basically means there's no food drops ahead. There is no support with like dogs or sleds or anything like that.
There's no slack packing.
Nothing. So everything you need, your tent, your fuel for the stoves, your food, everything.
Yeah.
Has to go with you.
But now, is it like a team effort or are you the man that has to carry all of your stuff?
So you carry your own stuff.
Yeah.
Our team is 8 strong plus then 2 guides who kind of just host the direction and they make sure everything works.
Yeah.
But every person is unsupported. So I carry my food. I can mind. The next step up from unsupported would be solo. So that would be on your ace. So now my problem is.
So is that 2028 now?
Maybe 29. But this is the problem, right? So I looked at all this stuff. And this came from, I turned 50 in January. And I always wanted to do something for my 50th.
Mm.
But I didn't want to do something you could buy for a brochure. Like climb Everest. Here's your ticket. Buy, add to cart.
Yeah.
Needed something more extreme.
Than climbing Everest.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Yes.
Why not?
So this thing came up. And with my love for the Arctic, when I got to the Svalbard the first time in 2012 or 13... You get off and it's like a movie. You're like, what is this?
Yeah.
And then you start learning about all these, the Shackletons, the Amundsen, Scott's Expedition, and all those good things.
And all those realize, original madmen.
Total.
Now your name is slowly being etched onto that board.
and just the idea of doing those extreme things was always attractive.
Mm.
And I mean, I come from a sporting background and I like the competition. So long story short, I then start looking, okay, how many South Africans have done this? Mm-hmm. So unsupported, only 3 that we know of. Has finished it unsupported.
Wow.
So if I pull this off, and touch wood, where's wood, then I would be one of at least 5 who's done it. Nobody's done it unsupported yet.
Okay.
And I start talking to family at home saying, you know what?
Yeah.
If this is finished, that's
it's
no.
That name onto the
it's
board.
Just, it's literally just no.
Yeah.
So, but it forms part of the big trilogy of Arctic exploration. Mm. It's the South Pole on foot, North Pole on foot, and Greenland crossing.
Okay.
It's the big 3.
Okay.
So it's been coming a long time. And suddenly I wake up this morning and was like, oh shit, in 3 sleeps, I'm leaving.
It's here.
So yeah, it's been.
And I mean, you've been building up to this now for, because you did like a mini version of this going across Svalbard. I don't want to say mini, but you did a Svalbard.
Yes.
On foot.
So in order to do Greenland, you have to have some kind of Arctic expedition experience.
Yeah.
Last year, is it last year, 2025?
Maybe.
I did 12 days on the ice.
Yes. Yeah.
Svalbard. But in order to have done that one, you need to do an Arctic kind of training course expedition.
Okay.
And that was 5 days on the ice 2 years ago.
Okay. So you've slowly been building up to this. Well, not slowly, quite quickly actually.
It's been a bit of a rush. I tend to do things that way.
Yeah.
So the first one teaches you kind of proper skiing technique, because it's not skiing like downhill, it's cross country.
Yeah.
Also like, how do you light the stove with the gas and the fuel in a closed tent without burning yourself down, frostbite.
Especially a nylon tent. It's just really, I think it's nylon.
It's made out of it. So all of those things kind of trained, and then you did the 12 days and then this.
Yeah.
So, it's been coming a while.
Mm.
And I spoke to someone recently as well, and I know what it feels like to wake up at minus 30 in a tent. Because even though you're in your bag, you're still shivering.
Yeah.
But you know, on day 12, what it feels like. I don't know what day 13, 14, 21, 27 feels like.
Yeah.
And that's where the headspace becomes interesting.
Yeah.
So I've been sharing a lot on my Substack and on videos more for me to kind of learn what and where and how and those kind of things. So it's...
Yeah, I watched your video the other day where you're like, okay, so I've got this bottle, and then you quickly cut to this bottle for my pee.
Yeah, you got a pee bottle. Yeah. You don't want to be going outside.
Oh, right. That's what it's for. I was going to say, why can't you just pee on the ice? Is that against the rules?
So in the days, you can.
Okay, so you can just...
It comes with its own challenge, because I mean, if you're skiing, so you do from the morning when you leave camp, when you've broken down, hour ski, 10 minutes off, hour ski, 10 minutes off.
Okay.
Military style.
Okay.
You have to. So every 10 minutes.
It's just to bring in more calories.
Yeah. So it's a standing break. You just stand and pull together, have some biltong, dry horse, snacks, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you go again. And then lunchtime is 30 minutes. And then you repeat that until you get to camp. So peeing in between is fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
But in the evening.
When you're in that tent, you don't get out.
You're in your
there.
Bag. Now you got to go out, put boots on, get outside. Yeah, yeah. So you got the pee bottle there.
Yeah.
So I got a luminous one. It apparently shines in the dark.
Well, that'll help. It'll certainly help. Oh. So on a scale of 1 to 10. How dangerous is this thing?
I hope certain people aren't listening to this. Look, well, yeah, the risk is real.
Yeah.
The risk is real.
I mean, I was thinking about this yesterday. I was like, geez,
yeah.
What is the support? Like, if the shit hits the fan, is there a helicopter? Is there a, what happens?
So some of the permitting is a tough, it's a 4-stage permitting in order to get this done. So IceTrax, the company who I'm doing it with, Eric Phillips, who's the owner, he's probably one of the most well-known and decorated Arctic explorer of our time. Yeah. He's done the North Pole on his own, South Pole on his own, he's Green on his own. He was recently in space with Elon Musk on not with Elon Musk, but with, what's his thing called?
SpaceX.
Because he's one of the few guys that's been to the poles on his own, they took him and they orbited like top to bottom with him.
All right.
Phenomenal guy. So it's his company. Yeah, yeah. And so he did all the permitting and stuff. So a lot of the fees that we had to pay is for evacuation cover, and it's heavy. Also, my insurance and stuff has to be there.
Yeah.
One of the guys who did it with me last year, Svalbard, the 12-day, he pulled out after about 5 or 6 days. His lower back couldn't take it anymore. So that was more of a training weakness, maybe injury type of thing. But look, the it is real. The first 4 or 5 days, you're climbing because you have to go from basically the shore up onto the ice cap. So it's rocks and snow.
Yeah.
So that's not skis. That's with gaiters. So on your ski boots, you've got these big, aggressive-looking gaiters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Crampons.
Yeah.
Gaiters, crampons. So you're climbing up, and there's, I mean, ankles and this and the kind of thing.
Yeah.
Frostbite, those kind of things is real, but that you can manage on the road. So it's not a jog down.
It's not a walk in the park.
No.
Any whiskers.
I think. Sorry, go for it.
No. I was just going to say, you know, obviously you're saying the cost. How much is this expedition, if you can talk about it?
How
much is it costing?
The in total that I raised in donations is about 18,500 euros.
Okay. So cheaper than an Everest trip.
Correct. It's there. So
in that ballpark.
The gratitude I have for people that came to the party is I put this out on the back of Svalbard. And what I think some people like to follow the story.
Yeah.
I've got some people saying, listen, I saw you put a video up of dragging tires. I went to walk my dog for the first time in 6 years around the block. So people are like somehow inspired by some of these things.
I went to the gym yesterday and I was like, shit, man, I'm struggling to walk uphill for 20 minutes here, dragging tires around the neighborhood.
So some people follow this.
For those that don't know, sorry, myself and Jerry live in the same neighborhood as each other. He posted a video a few weeks ago of himself at 4 o'clock in the morning dragging tires around Fairlands neighborhood in Johannesburg, South Africa. And he, funny enough, posted a photograph or a video of him walking down the street that I basically live on. I didn't even know that. I said, geez, Jerry, while you were doing that, I was, you know.
If I knew, I would have come for coffee or something.
Yeah. And then, And I was in gym yesterday and I was like, geez, Jerry can do that, pull tires around in the middle of the night. Yeah. I should be able to do this. Yeah. So you have been an inspiration.
There you go.
Many people.
But I started raising the money in January. And I think the hardest thing there was you're training really hard for something that's not confirmed yet.
Yes.
But if I didn't raise the money, it wouldn't go. And then you've got all this time and stuff invested. So, I mean, some people, they'll know who they are listening, it's blown my mind.
Yeah.
And they said to me, listen, if we're close to the end and you still need X, let's talk. And these people made it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I've got a total of about 35 people who donated to make this happen.
Yeah.
It's been very humbling in a way. It's been, the gratitude's amazing. But it's 18,500, which is the expedition, the flights up and down, one or two specific pieces of equipment that I needed, and then accommodation before and after.
Okay.
So yeah, it's not a small thing.
I'll tell you what,
in South African rand terms,
yeah,
it's real.
How you know, I'm just thinking now, you say your accommodation before and after.
Mm.
I wonder what that shower is going to feel like, that first bit of hot water hitting you.
No.
You know, probably going to sting.
Yeah. They start
it's going to take a couple of weeks. Yeah, sort of cold and work your way up, yeah.
It's also, because when afterwards, the first place we spend a night, these Greenland towns are not easy to pronounce. I think it's like Isatork or something.
Okay.
One night there, then we bounce with a helicopter to Kulusuk, one night there,
yeah.
Fly into Reykjavik. So I'm not sure what those little towns are like, because the town where we end at the end of this only has 59 inhabitants.
Mm. Oh, wow.
It's like as many people in the office almost.
Yeah, you hope they have hot water.
Correct. So it looks very picturesque if you look at the pictures.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's that. And I remember last year when I finished Svalbard, it was 12 days. Mm. And we had brutal weather on that one. It was cold and windy.
Yeah.
And we got back to Svalbard, to Longyearbyen, to the people who've been there. And I was at Porfararen for the last night, where we go with our Svalbard trips.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got into the room, you dump everything out, I sat down, I literally burst into tears. Because you're keeping in so much, and you have to, like, that cold is there all the time. And suddenly it's just
there's no escape.
This release.
Yeah.
I think I sat there for half an hour before I wanted to shower.
Yeah.
And I must have been in there for an hour. Yeah. Just like stand there.
The room next door was wondering where all the hot water's gone.
Whole hotel's been compromised.
Shit, I can imagine the release of emotion and just relaxation.
Mm.
You know, I often find, you know, when you deal with something that's very stressful in life, as a life coach, as a performance coach, would know this, but it's an interesting thing when you deal with a large amount of stress and you get through that stressful thing, how your immune system just takes that sudden collapse, right? Mm-hmm. You either feel sick or ill or emotionally, mentally.
100%.
The thing's gone, the thing's done with, but now you have to recover from it.
It's tough. I was working with a client, Johan, not our Johan. He's a South African guy, works on cruise liners, and he did his first Ironman last year, or half Ironman, but still, it's an achievement.
Yeah.
So he's never done anything like this, and we worked up mentally for this and how he got through it. And one of the things we spoke about is, what is your plan when you run across the finish line?
Mm.
What then?
Yeah,
because everything you've defined yourself for the last 8 months by this thing, what happens then?
Yeah.
Are you going to take a moment and just kind of be in the moment, but then what happens then? Because for most athletes, the most difficult thing is the day after the World Championship.
Yeah.
You wake up, I mean, Michael Phelps is the classic example.
Yeah.
Woke up after the Olympics, 12 gold medals, and the next day you're nothing. You're just back to being another person.
Back to
So that's also, looking ahead, what's next, and kind of looking at all these things. Did you know you could cross deserts as well?
Oh, shit.
I found that out recently.
So you're going to go from sleeping bags to sun cream, man?
Possibly, we'll chat.
Go to the Sahara, man.
Yeah.
Go find those lost civilizations.
There you go.
There. Cool.
So the challenging thing, I think, headspace-wise with Greenland is the time on the plateau.
Mm.
It's a dead zone. You're not going to see a bird fly over. There's no life. There's no nothing.
Yeah.
And after you leave Die 2, it's an old American, like, nuclear-looking thing. It's about 4 or 5 days in. You spend a night there at this thing, and then you go for 10 to 15 days. It's like the Matrix. It's just white.
Just flat and
good. And that's where most people struggle mentally.
So is it like a flat, I'm imagining a Mara plain, but now just white?
Correct.
That's it. There's crevices or anything like that.
Right on the top of the ice sheet, you've got that. Because your ice is between 2 and 3 kilometers deep.
Wow, okay.
On top. So it's there. But as you get closer, you start going down on the sides, more crevasses and snow. Mm. But on the top, it could be beautiful, sunny.
Yeah.
But it's like a white line.
And this. Yeah.
Nothing.
So you got to keep that bearing straight. Because I know the guys in the southern Serengeti, if you've ever been there, where those plains are so vast and so big that you can actually get lost on a plane.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think was possible. So I can imagine it's that same issue, especially when you're out there on the snow. You're going to be dealing with a fair bit of deliriousness. Yeah. You're going to be
when
emotional.
The whiteout comes in.
Yeah, when the snow.
Because then if the whiteout happens, if there's mist, you can't tell top. We had it once in Svalbard last year. We can't tell the top from bottom. There's nothing in the horizon.
Yeah, it's like being in space.
You literally see the person in front of you, and it's white around you. You almost get dizzy. Yeah.
But now, don't you stop and hunker down when those sort of things happen?
So if there's wind, yes. Otherwise, you keep going. But last year, what we had to do is every 200 meters, we would stop and check both the GPS and the compass.
Yeah, you hope your batteries haven't failed on you. And
so it's interesting. So
yeah.
And then the other one, which is a bit of a, not a fear, but there's a wind, and I should remember the name, Ipetorke or something, on the east coast. It's katabatic wind. And there's a season for this thing. We're at the end of that season, which pushes 200 k's an hour.
And suddenly you're dealing down. With, is it like katabatic, like we used to from the Drakensberg, where correct. It really drops, it heats up?
I'm not sure of the temperature. Yeah. Sure.
All right.
But they reckon it pushes about 200 k's an hour.
Jeez,
so if you hit that, then you're stuck in your tent.
Yeah.
For days.
And you hope your tent holds up.
Correct. Yeah, they graded. I checked this. Until about 210, 220, that if you put them down, they can hold.
You're on the limit there.
Just.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's all these things. But so I'm now looking at Audible books that I'm downloading and
podcasts.
I had to go and buy the AirPods with the wire.
Yeah.
Because if those things drop out or battery,
Apple
charges me ridiculous money now to find one that fits this.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, I've just recently made it, just as a quick little sub. Tangent.
Yeah.
I've made the change to wired headphones again as well, because I feel like the Bluetooth is maybe not the most healthy thing for us. But anyway, that's a discussion for another day.
Yeah.
How many, it's taking you, plus minus, a few weeks to do. How many kilometers are you going to be doing a day on average?
I think if we spoke about between 18 and 23.
Okay.
A day.
So it's quite a push, eh?
Yeah. The initial stages are slower because you're climbing.
Yeah.
And when you go down on the East Coast, it's also a bit rocky and you've got to kind of watch the passes. But on a good day, if you've got good weather, you could get to 25.
Yeah. So there's a chance that you could finish this faster than the allocated time or slower than the allocated time. And there has to be contingencies for both of those, right?
So we've got 25 days planned. The problem with the flight on the back end, everything is flexi tickets.
Yeah.
And they charge like a wounded buffalo.
Yeah, especially now. You're lucky you booked these tickets a while back.
So the idea is we're aiming for 20 to 22 per day on the open stretch. But weather-wise, I'm following online a Finnish team that started about 8 days ago.
Okay.
So they've been
posting. Is that with the same little gizmo that you're going to be taking with you, kind of thing?
I think they must. The stuff they're posting on Instagram is Starlink, I think.
Yeah.
I have got access. I might post one or two things.
Okay. For those of you that are listening, sorry, the little gizmo we're chatting about is Jerry's got this tracking device that, and you can tell us the name now, but essentially what Jerry's going to be able to do throughout this expedition is post a sound bite per day, maybe a couple of photographs and a little bit of a paragraph.
Correct.
Text update. Yeah. What's the name of that?
It's a Garmin InReach 3 Mini Plus.
Okay. And then it links to a bit of software.
Yeah. So that thing then on the phone links to the Garmin Messenger app. So I could send messages on there to people back home.
Okay.
Or then it syncs onto a platform which is called 060.
Okay.
And it takes your map share data from the Garmin and it tracks it in real time. So there's a map on my website which is, it's going to move in real time as we go.
Yeah.
And wherever I then post photos, the audio or a paragraph, it takes the location and it puts it on the map.
Okay. So if you just go and hover over it.
On it and it opens up and it's a pretty cool system.
All right. I'm looking so forward to seeing this thing come together. We'll definitely share a bit of it on the Wild Eye socials. That'll be very cool.
And we spoke about maybe for Svalbard because we've been able to do that.
Mm.
So I'm still going to have the subscription. So for us to be able to say to the people, follow Andrew, myself, and Svalbard, click here and see what we're doing. Yep. And that's pretty cool.
Such a cool little gizmo. Mm. All right. So you can push a little bit harder or take a bit of an easier day if needs be and someone's a bit tired. Yeah.
What I was saying, this Finnish team, they started about 7 or 8 days ago and they hit a storm just as they got onto the plateau, so to speak.
Ah, shit.
And they were tent bound for 2 days because of wind. Mm. Couldn't go.
But then the problem is now you're eating into your reserves,
mm-hmm.
So you've now lost 2 days on that bag of biltong that you're taking with you.
Yeah. And I just want to come in and stuff your face.
When you're bored, you just chow, especially when you've got a big bag of dry vorse with you.
That's I'm going to buy that. I actually got one of the things, so last year I took, I think it's Vuma, get a Diskem. It's a little bar, almost looks like a nougat.
Okay.
But it's they call it an electrolyte or performance bar. And there's sodium and potassium
super
in this.
Calorie,
So it's very dense. So in the mornings when we started breaking camp down, put on your ski jacket, and when you start eating, it's like out of the deep freeze. But now someone mentioned, well, why don't I just take nougat as a straight up? Because it's egg white, it's sugar, it's carbs and everything. So anyway, so Wedgwood nougat from here.
Yeah, yeah.
Got in touch with the owner and they sponsored me 4 boxes of nougat.
That's Wedgwood, eh?
Yes.
That's cool, and that's good nougat.
So now I've packed what I think is a month's supply and like sealed it up with all out the papers. I still got 2 boxes at home.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. Every time you walk past, it's like, how you doing?
The other one, yeah.
That's kind of the snacks in between is that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, if I was in your situation, I probably would only buy that dry vorse or biltong, like at the very last minute.
Yes.
Because if I have that in my house, then I'm just going to chow it and then it's going to be finished and I have to go buy more.
So, especially now working from home.
Yeah.
Like every time I take a bite,
you get downstairs. Yeah. I feel like eat you. All right. Well, Jerry, Thank you so much for coming in today.
No, thank you.
It's been a pleasure working with you over the last, what have I been, I'm 6 years almost at Wild Duck.
Before COVID?
No, just after. During
six,
COVID.
6 years ago.
Yeah, 5-6 years.
Imagine.
Yeah, so it's been a pleasure working with you. It's been a pleasure having you back in the office today. And last week when we managed to get you a little bit of a farewell together, it was really amazing.
That was very cool.
I look forward to seeing what you get up to in Greenland.
Mm.
I look forward to seeing what you get up to in the future.
Yeah.
I know who to call when I need to chat about things. And for anyone out there that's looking for someone that is just truly inspirational and a pleasure to interact with, please get in touch with Jerry.
No, I appreciate it, Luke.
Yeah, super special human being. So
no.
Good luck out there.
Thank you. We'll chat to you soon.
Folks, follow Jerry. Find him at jerryvandervelde.com.
Correct.
And follow him on his crazy journey through Greenland. It's going to be wild.
Thanks.
Cheers, Jerry.
Cheers, man. Bye.